The Five Leadership Questions podcast is brought to you by Ministry Grid, an online video-based training resource for all the leaders and volunteers at your church. To learn more and to get a two-week free trial, visit ministrygrid.com/howitworks. That's ministrygrid.com/howitworks. Now, enjoy the podcast. Welcome to the Five Leadership Questions podcast. I'm your host, Barnabas Piper, here as usual with Todd Adkins.
What?
Ooh, Todd, you had a little pubescent crack in that one.
Yeah, I don't know what's the deal.
But a little late life puberty, that's tough.
I guess.
I wouldn't know anything about
I'm
that.
I'm a little verklempt.
Talk amongst yourselves. Well, today we have the honor of talking to Ron Edmondson. So in just a minute, you'll hear this conversation. For those of you who don't know, Ron Edmondson is the pastor of Emmanuel Baptist Church in Lexington, Kentucky, a large church there, previously planted a couple different churches. Prior to that, was a business owner himself for close to 20 plus years. So longtime business owner, then has been in ministry for quite a few years. So we talk a little bit about that transition and how those business principles can carry into the pastorate and be a benefit. The thing to know about Ron is that he is one of the most practical and beneficial church leadership bloggers out there. So
and prolific. He's been doing it a long time.
Yeah. So it's pretty much daily, and every post has just succinct practical advice. So he and Tom Rainer, I would say, and Carrie Newhoff are maybe the three who come to mind most readily in terms of just practical church leadership blogs. And it's just ronedmondson.com. So real easy to remember. That'll be in our show notes, and I'll highlight that at the end of the show as well. But go to lifeway.com/leadership, find those show notes. You can find links to his blogs. We often share them in our Friday links posts at that site, lifeway.com/leadership. So we had a great conversation with him about the pastorate, about leading change. He's in a legacy church, and they're trying to make sure that they're successfully carrying out the mission of the gospel while not losing that legacy, but also not going stale and not being tied to the past. And so that's a significant challenge. And he talks about some of those things. He is one of the most steady and level-headed types of leaders who I've run across. I mean, you can hear it in his voice. Yeah. He's just not a he's not
stable.
Peaks and valleys. Yeah. No. And then before we get there to the conversation, though, I do want to thank our sponsor, Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary. You have heard it several times on this podcast. Our partnership with them between Lifeway and Southeastern is a longstanding thing and a very strong relationship. You can go to sebts.edu/5LQ to learn more about their master's degrees. They have an undergrad program. They offer degrees for people in lay ministry, pursuing theological degrees, vocational ministry, going into missions. They are all about the Great Commission. And I know you may be tired of hearing me say it, but it's still true. And they're kind of a one-of-a-kind school in their focus on that. Their leadership is incredible. We've had a couple of their leaders, Danny Aiken and Bruce Ashford, on the podcast several months ago now. So you can go back and find those episodes. But we would encourage you to go check them out. They have distance education options for those who can't be on campus there. So again, that's sebts.edu/5LQ. That's Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary. They're located in Wake Forest, North Carolina, they have a beautiful campus. And if you can ever make it, go to that website and find out about the distance options. So again, sebts.edu/5LQ. You won't regret exploring it a little bit. And if you use the code 5LQ at your application, you'll get a discount on your application fee. So a little perk for listeners as well. So check that out. Now, here is our conversation with Ron. You will enjoy it. We are here with Ron Edmondson, who, as you heard in the intro, is the pastor of Emmanuel Baptist Church in Lexington. Ron, thanks so much for taking the time to join us on the Five Leadership Questions podcast.
I've been looking forward to this, so thanks for having me.
Absolutely. And our listeners will know that we regularly give guests a chance to kind of introduce themselves. We give the bio at the beginning where we highlight websites and books and Twitter feeds and all that stuff. But we would love to hear from you about your role in ministry, how you got there, a little bit of your story, anything you think is important about yourself. So family, hobbies, what is important about Ron that our listeners need to know?
You know, I'm not real complicated, but I have a background in business longer than I have a background in ministry. And I think that's probably a little unique. mm-hmm. especially pastoring a church, you know, a fairly decent sized church at Emmanuel. So I've been in ministry. We keep forgetting the year that I went in, but I think we're approaching 15 years of ministry. But I came out of the business world, and that shapes a lot of how I lead the church, quite honestly. It also causes me to focus on issues like you're talking about, which is why I love your podcast, because leadership is an important issue to me. But as far as personally, my wife Cheryl and our two grown sons, Jeremy and Nate, or we call him Nathaniel. He, you know, as kids do sometimes, shorten his name. But we're going to stick with what we gave him. But the they're great. Jeremy is married, lives in Nashville. Nathaniel is in Seattle, is a youth pastor, and they're just great. Two great kids.
Well, awesome. So when you said that you were in business for longer than you've been in ministry, and you said that informs your leadership or that drives your leadership, before we get into some of the specific questions, can you give some sense of what that looks like? Because one of the things we love to do in this podcast is sort of help people see how business principles or what are called business principles can work in a church context, and that those two things are not antithetical. So can you talk about meshing those two together a little bit?
Well, I'll be honest with you, it can be a blessing and a curse. I'll give you a real quick story. Shortly after I came to Emmanuel, we were in a very bad financial situation at the time. The church had gone without a pastor and seen decline, and some significant givers had left the church. People were probably holding on to money, as they sometimes do. And so we were in a real crunch financially. And one of the things that I said pretty early in coming, I said, you know, we've got to improve our revenue situation. We've got to increase revenue if we're going to move the church forward. And dear, sweet, godly man in the church had a real problem with that. And he made it known to a few others before he made it known to me. I found out through other sources. But he really had a problem with me using the word revenue. That was such a business term. I should have used tithes and offerings. Yeah. And I ended up having a conversation with him, and I reminded him, and he was a business guy. You know, we have, as a church, we have lots of different avenues of income coming into the church. We have a cafe, we have a early childhood program, we have our building is rented out for different things, in addition to the tithes and offerings that people give. So it's a curse sometimes, in that I use business terms sometimes, but it's a blessing in that I understand that. I understand that it's the church, while it's not a business, there's a lot of things that go into making a church happen, making a church work, the business of the church. And so I understand that side of it. You know, when I sit in a finance meeting, I'm not asked, I don't need them to tell me how to read the reports. Yeah. I know how to read the reports.
Right. And that is, yeah, that's got to be a blessing, considering that that's not something necessarily that gets taught in depth in a lot of seminaries.
No. Not at all. Most of the time, at least in my personal experience, we weren't given anything like that. And I was in a leadership school as well, so you know, it wasn't just straight theological education. It was an MDiv with an emphasis in leadership, but still, you would think that something like that would come up. The implications of that are pretty big, because you do need to keep the lights on.
Absolutely. And I think it's so important. And you mentioned the lights on. I know what our utility bill is, and we have a huge complex, and our utility bill is large, to the point that if we could save 10% on our utility bill, we could practically double our student ministry's budget in a year. You know, when you think of it in terms like that, then the utility bill becomes very, very important, because those are kingdom dollars at stake. Those are dollars we can use other places. And so, you know, and that's just one area, finances being one. There's so many other areas dealing with personnel and you know, things like that, that just the business transfers over. And while I may sound like a businessman sometimes, I love Jesus and I love his church. And, you know, I want those experiences to work for the kingdom and be a blessing, not a curse.
I hadn't thought of it before, but now that we're kind of talking, it's, to me, it's interesting. As you were talking, I was thinking about, well, when Jesus talks about, you know, leading a church, half the time sometimes he's talking about being a good shepherd, and sometimes it's talking about being a good steward.
Absolutely.
And so I think as pastors, you know, we might tend to be swing into more one side than the other, and it's just figuring out, okay, if I'm more of a shepherd, what are the things that I need to, what are the competencies that I need to develop? And if I'm more of, you know, a steward, what do I need to develop on the pastoral side?
Yeah. And, you know, and I don't mean to take all of the time on this, and I probably need to improve on the shepherd side, to be honest. I would be weaker in that area. To give you just another example, when you were talking, it triggered for me. When you're in business, every customer matters. You know, you realize that they're paying, they are keeping the lights on. When you become into the church world, you don't think in those terms, obviously. Every person matters, obviously, but you're not thinking necessarily their revenue sense of it. But one of the things that I've done for our staff over the years is I'll ask our bookkeeper to blot out the names on a check, you know, the signature and the address and all that, and just give me a check that has cents attached to it, like $10.57 or $21.37. And the reason is that's somebody was intentional there.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe it's their tithe. You know, I believe they've entrusted that to us. That's the widow's mite many times, that they have entrusted to us to care for and to steward well. And so you're exactly right. I think that's a key part of leading a church. And I realize we're talking to a lot of pastors that are not equipped in those ways. You don't have to be, but you got to trust people and put those in the hands of people who are thinking that way. And there are those people in the church.
Absolutely. Well, I want to move us into our first question, and that is, who are you currently learning from?
Well, I've always been a learner, whether through books or conferences. I usually have several mentors in my life at any given time. And then there have been significant moments of people speaking words of wisdom into my life that I needed right then. So I'm always looking for those nuggets of wisdom. But I would say who I'm currently learning from is probably the people on our team. I try to surround myself with smarter people than me. I empower and encourage them to be learning themselves and bringing those back to the team. And as we record this, I just came out of a day-long staff retreat. And right now, our team is challenging me in some new ways of doing things that I just had not thought about. And so I'm learning from them these days.
When you say they challenge you, obviously that doesn't mean like challenging your authority. You just mean like bringing new ways to your attention. But what does that conversation look like? Because it can be an intimidating thing to go to a senior leader and say, hey, here's a proposal of some different ways to do things that we haven't done them before. So what does that conversation look like when you get challenged with those ideas and those new ways of doing things?
Well, and I go back to your question, because while I do mean challenge my way of thinking, I also mean challenge me. And I hope that if I have an idea, that I put an idea out there, that I'm developing the tight culture where they feel the freedom to challenge that idea, to say, hey, even if, you know, we have some on our team, especially on our leadership team, we're close enough that I hope they would walk in and say, that's really dumb, Ron. And what are we doing? What are you even thinking? You know, if I need to hear that, I hope they would feel that freedom. But what I mean is making me think different from what I have been thinking. We just decided yesterday to redo a major event. And I couldn't in my wildest imagination think we were going to change this, because it's wildly successful. We've only been doing it a couple of years. We anticipated doubling it this year, and we made a significant change yesterday that we're not even going to do this event. Instead, we're going to spread that energy and those resources across a lot of different areas, thinking that we'll actually benefit from what's new. And so I just wasn't even thinking that way, you know. And yeah. So they challenged me to go in a different direction.
Is that? I realize we're going a little far afield, but I think it's a practical question. So when your team decides to do away with an event that is a significant thing, sounds like it's something that the church has done with some regularity. Is that something you anticipate pushback from people in the church on? And if so, you know, how do you all as a team communicate that change and then kind of lead people through the why of how you're doing things differently?
Well, I'll give you the exact events, and that way you understand what we're talking about. We called it Christmas Experience, and it was a 1 day. Last year we made it into a 2 day event, the 1st of December, where we did lots of things. Imagine a fall festival that we did in December. It's just a little easier to tell the story of the gospel at Christmas than it is at a fall festival. But we had done a fall festival for years. This church was known for its fall festivals in the community. And after I came and we began looking at fall festival, it really became very difficult. Telling the gospel was just a side product. All we entertained children and we gave out a lot of candy. We had some fun, cool stuff, but we really didn't get to share the gospel, and that's why we're here. And so we cast the vision to move that to a Christmas experience. It's been several years now. It's been very successful, but we did get pushback. I mean, I was accused of killing Fall Festival, and but what we would say is we didn't kill that at all. We actually took that energy and placed it somewhere that better lines up with our mission, and that's what we're going to do with this Christmas experience, where we're going to spread that same energy over 2 days, over the whole month of December. We're going to cast the vision for what we might reach. This year, we anticipated maybe reaching 5,000, 6,000, 7,000 people over those 2 days. Over the course of a month, perhaps we could reach 10,000, 15,000, 20,000. There was a joke made in our meeting yesterday. Our largest growing segment in our church right now is our Chinese internationals that are coming. If we reach them, we can reach billions. You know, I mean, so we're going to paint the vision of this better aligns with who we are, with our mission as a church. This is a better use of our resources and our time, and just keep telling that story. And then, you know, some people are not going to get it, and they're going to complain. And, you know, we own those, and we understand those. And one of the things that I like to do when we do something like that is I like to call it an experiment. So, hey, we're going to try this. It may not work. If not, we'll go back to the Christmas experience the way it was last year, you know. But for now, let's try this and see how it works.
I like that open-ended way of doing it, because it doesn't feel like, to a person who is resistant to change, it feels a little bit more, a little softer, a little bit easier to accept. Well, let's move to our second question, and that is, what is the main point of emphasis for your leadership right now, either for the team there at the church or just for yourself personally as a leader?
Well, we just went through a really gut-wrenching time over the first half of the year, trying to determine where we were going next. All indications were that we needed to add a third service. We've grown rapidly in the last few years. We're out of room. Our parking lot's about 96% full on Sunday mornings. We've had Sundays recently where people drove in the parking lot and drove out because they couldn't find a space. And so it doesn't make sense that we would not add another service. And yet, as we process that, as I processed it personally in my personal prayer time, and then took it back to our leadership team, it just became apparent we were not. There were some things as a church we just weren't doing well at, and it didn't make sense to get bigger until we got better. And so we discovered four areas: prayer, discipleship, missional living, and evangelism, that are critical areas for our church. We would say we believe in all of those and want to be a part of all those. And yet, if we were honest with ourselves, we weren't doing really well at any of those. And I said to our church one Sunday, I said, you know, if you're not doing well in those four areas, let's just not call ourselves a church for a while. Okay, we're Emmanuel Baptist, but let's just drop the church label until we can get better in these four areas. And so that's our main points of emphasis right now. We've got four staff members that have assumed ownership of each of those four, and that's another way they are leading me and teaching me. They're out discovering the best practices in each of those four disciplines and bringing them back. So that's really where we're focusing on right now.
How are you measuring the you said we shouldn't get bigger until we get better, which I think is a fantastic principle, but how are you measuring better so that you know when it's the right time to make the shift?
You know, that's a great question. I get asked that all the time. You know, and a lot of times we put all of our measurements into numbers. And we can certainly measure the numbers and see how many people are getting into groups. You know, when I say our parking lot's full, that's coming to worship. Not all of those are in groups. So that'll be one measurement of it. Service will be another measurement of it through the missional living and the evangelism. How many are out there doing it? We've started some new prayer initiatives and how many are involved in that. But to be honest, I believe in a subjective measurement too. That measurement you mm-hmm. can't really quantify. You can't put a number behind it, but you just know. You know, when you walk into your church on Sunday morning, and you feel just the presence of God and the Spirit of God and the attitude of the people and the energy that's in the room and all those sort of things, you just know it's working.
Right.
We knew it wasn't working with prayer, you know, for example. We knew it wasn't working with discipleship, for example. And that was one of the – when we introduced that term, for instance, this is a Sunday school church and we do a great job with Sunday school. And some people were like, well, what do you mean we're not doing well in discipleship? We have all kinds of Sunday school classes and people go to them. Well, but disciples making disciples, that's what we were missing. And another example of that is we have right now about 16 or 17 young people who sense a call to ministry. And our staff is trying to invest in them, but we can't do it all. So who's going to mm-hmm. invest in them? And until we raise up some people who can invest in them, until we have our young men and our young women being mentored, and so a lot of it is going to be subjective. I think we'll know when we get there, the way we knew we weren't there yet.
Well, I do think that does lead into our third question really well, because you're already talking about some obstacles that you're facing. But what are some additional obstacles that you're facing right now?
You know, I think for us, this is a 106-year-old church, and the constant obstacle for us is the tension of holding on to the great history that we have and while embracing the opportunities of something new in the future. We are a different – I've been here 4 years. We're a different church today than we were when we came, not just in numbers but in, you know, just in flavor and in people and all those sort of things. And yet one of the things we've tried not to do is rob the culture of the church. And so but there are some who are just wondering where their church went, you know, and I get that. I mean, those are just the raw emotions of change. And so, I just encounter people all the time that wonder why we can't do it like we did 20 years ago or why we did. You know, it's funny how they'll come up to me and say, why did you change that? And it's something we haven't done in 20 years. I wasn't even here when they changed it, but it was special to them. And there's so much change going on. They just assume I changed that too, you know. But I think we've tried really hard not to hijack the church, mm-hmm. but there are some things that will just never return. We'll never do them again.
Do you feel like when people have that kind of question, you know, why did we change that one thing? Do you feel like that's an instance where the world around them, the church around them is changing so rapidly that they've just sort of planted a stake on that one thing? And that's like, I don't know if they're attaching their church commitment to it or whatever it is, like, but that's just sort of the...
Enough is enough?
Yeah, they're just sort of like, that's the one thing that they identify with. And so it's the rest of the change is overwhelming, but if that one thing stays the same, it feels like it's safe. Or what's the mindset of that? And I'm asking this on behalf of leaders who are in a situation similar to yourselves, trying to lead people through change, away from certain traditions, but trying to keep the legacy alive, those kinds of things.
Well, I would say every change is uncomfortable to somebody. And, you know, there's always an emotion attached to change because there's a sense of loss. And I would say what those people are going, you know, and you said that one thing many times, and I think one of you said there's lots of change going on in their life and in their world, and that's certainly true. but they attached to that one because that was the one hope they had left, you know, perhaps, or that was the most comfortable for them. And I think that's why worship ends up being one of those big ones that they don't want to change, because that was their comfort. You know, that was their level. I tell you, if there's anything that's been a struggle for me in church revitalization, and I say this just very candidly, but also very humbly and purposefully at the same time, it has been the mindset of those who would rather the church be comfortable while they're alive than exist after they die. And that's been a struggle for me. It really has, because I read the scriptures to say we have to consider others before even ourselves. Mm-hmm. And so that one there has been the biggest struggle for me. But I totally understand that. And one of the ways we've tried to get around that, and this has been huge for us, and I think our people who are here, the majority of them, would think we've tried to recognize that sense of loss of change. We've tried to, I use the phrase, and this will be my phrase, so if you use it, you have to, you know, attribute it to me, but it's rediscover rather than reinvent. And so we really have tried to key in on things. While we may be changing this over here, here's something else that you love, that you absolutely loved about the church, and maybe we hadn't been good at it in a long time. We're going to get better at it. You're going to get to be a part of that. Missions is one of those for our church. They weren't doing a lot when we got here, but this used to be one of the most mission-minded churches in the state of Kentucky. We're getting back to that now, and so some of those people who had the heart for that are so excited about that. We can tweak this over here with worship, and it doesn't feel as much of a loss because the other thing that they're excited about is getting better.
Yeah, that is significant. I think also just having, I mean, I've been at churches that have gone from traditional to contemporary and just stylistic changes and things, but the ones who do it effectively are the ones who show that the essence hasn't changed, the communication style has. So the essence of the message, the essence of the mission, the essence of discipleship, of following Christ, whatever those things are, has not changed a bit. But there's a changing of, I mean, it's putting a new coat of paint on it so that it's fresh, it's bright, it communicates better to a current world, current generation, those kinds of things. But the structure, the essence is still there.
Yes, absolutely.
Well, let's move to our fourth question, and it's a bit of a shift because we've been talking church, we've been talking organization, talking mission, and now we're gonna go into the Edmondson home. And the question is simply, what does leadership in your home look like? You mentioned that you're married, you have two grown sons, so different stage in life than some of the people we talk to who have young children at home or who are single. But what does leadership in your home look like?
Well, we are in a different season, and it's a great season. I recommend it that you work. That you work towards it. But, you know, when our boys were at home, I saw my chief mission as to invest biblical principles into them that they would carry on into life. And it's certainly easier now. My wife is so collaborative. She doesn't like conflict. I could take advantage of that, but I try very hard not to. So I try to be her biggest cheerleader. I try to lead in my home the same way I do in the office. And that is, you know, my wife takes the initiative on most everything she has a passion for. So I don't have strong opinions on, and this is a silly example, but where we go to dinner, because if she does, let's go, you know? And so I allow her to lead me as much as I can. But, you know, I think my role as a leader of our home, the biggest thing that I bring to our home is I try to enforce scripture in our home. And did that when the boys were home, and we do that now. And, you know, my wife and I are so incredibly different. She could take things very heavy, for example, like when I get criticism at church, I can walk away from it easier than she can. And I have to remind her of truth. I have to bring her back to the truth of why we're here and what God's called us to do, and even the truth of the person that's delivering it, you know, whether it's even valid or not. But we operate our home with a certain amount of rules that are pre-established. We've agreed on them in advance, for instance, and they're biblical. We try to have biblical rules. We never, ever, ever go to bed angry, not once, maybe first year or two of our marriage, but we just don't do that. And, you know, I've learned if Cheryl goes to bed angry, she gets up angrier. And so we just really try to do that. We may stay up late, but we don't would have been angry. But, you know, living that way means that we have to learn to trust each other. We have to be united together. And that just requires a lot of work on our part.
No, that that makes a lot of sense. What I feel like fatigue and being angry don't go well together. So if it's, you know, if you have an argument at like 10 p.m., is the fatigue an impetus to resolve the argument or impetus to like dig in your heels?
Yeah, that's a good. Well, here's what you have to do, in my opinion. You have to put aside the anger. You may not have solved the issue, but you have to put aside the anger and say, we're not in agreement yet, but we're okay. Are we okay with each other? Let's go to sleep. We'll handle this in the morning. And that's so it's you're not solving the issue. That may take weeks or months, but you are releasing the anger. And that mm-hmm. becomes spiritual discipline. You have to do that on a daily basis. I can't imagine a pastor being very successful and not developing a discipline of being able to release anger. Because there's lots of things that can make you, you know, give you the emotion of anger quickly. You just have to learn to process those.
Right.
Earlier, you talked about your sons, and you know, I've been lucky enough to know one of them. He's a great guy. The next question, the last question, is what would you tell your 20-year-old self about preparing to lead? And I anytime I ask someone this question who has children that are 20 or more, I almost seem to frame it like they were talking to their kids, because I know that's how I look at it when I'm talking to my kids. What would I tell myself?
Absolutely. And of course, the thing I like about your podcast is, you know, the questions going into it. So I thought about that one and I came up with three things. The first one is a position does not make you a leader. Whether you have a title or not, you can be a leader. You'll have to love people and their success even more than your own. But the more you invest in people and make other people's life better, the more successful you'll be as a leader. And so I think younger people need to hear that, because they may not have the position they're waiting for yet, and yet God may be very well using them as a leader, or could use them as a leader exactly where they're at.
Mm-hmm.
The second thing I would say is that leadership is hard. I've been a leader now. You said 20-year-old is where you put the first paid leadership position I had was at the age of 20. And so I've been, and I'm 52, so I've been leading a long time. You have to discipline yourself for the long haul. And no one is going to discipline yourself as a leader other than you. They're not. People are going to, I mean, they want your time, they want your energy. So you're going to have to discipline yourself to rest, to stay healthy in all areas of your life, and just learn to be self-aware and honest with who you are and what you're dealing with at the time. And I just think that's so incredibly important. As we record this, another pastor, you know, burnt out this week, and we heard those news. And, you know, I just think to make it for the long haul, you've got to discipline yourself for that to occur. The last one I would say is just to trust the timing and the providence of God with your life. At 20 years of age, I remember being so anxious to get to whatever was next.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, as I look back over my life, and I never would have imagined that I was going to be where I'm at today. I didn't want to be a pastor, so I wouldn't have imagined that at all. But I wouldn't have imagined coming out of church planting, for example, and being in a very established church. And yet, through every season of my life, it prepared me for where I am today. I can look back and see that now. I couldn't see it at the time, but I can see it now. Again, as we record this, I'm preaching through a series on Joseph from the book of Genesis. And, you know, he's just a great reminder of how God is working, even when it feels at the time that he's not. And I think if I was 20 again, learning to trust him is such an important part of spiritual and personal maturity that I may not be where I want to be yet, but God knows what he's doing with my life. And that doesn't mean you don't network, you don't do all the things you can to get to the next level, you don't work hard, you don't make the right connections. It doesn't mean any of that. It just means don't grow weary where you're at. Keep doing the good because you'll reap a harvest when God is ready for you to do so.
It feels a lot like the first and the third thing that you said are tied together, because the first one you talked about, putting other people first and working on behalf of other people, because you may not be in the position, but God may be using it. And then you talked about trusting God's timing. And so for younger leaders, I feel like those two things go hand in hand, and it's essentially working to do the work of servant leadership now and trust God to establish you later. And the timing of it is up to him, and the faithfulness of it in many ways is up to us.
Absolutely. I agree with that.
Well, Ron, we really appreciate the time you've taken to share some leadership wisdom with us and some of your experiences. And I know our listeners will benefit from it as well. So thank you for setting this up with us and for taking the time and sharing with us. It's been great.
I've enjoyed it. Thank you both.
I will say this too. There's a couple of bloggers that we've talked about that just offer really quality, consistent, practical leadership lessons or applications that you can make almost immediately in your church. And Ron, you are you're kind of the prince of that form. So I would encourage people to look at ronedmondson.com.
Well, I'm honored. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. And for listeners, if you go to lifeway.com/leadership, you'll see our show notes there. We will have links to Ron's blog, as Todd just mentioned, and that you heard at the top of the show as well. And you can also find our leadership blog, where we share content from a variety of different Christian leaders and church leaders. We'll often share Ron's articles as part of our Friday links posts. You can find other resources there as well. So that's lifeway.com/leadership. Also, if you jump on iTunes, leave us a rating and review. That helps other listeners like yourselves find the podcast, hopefully find some benefit in it, learn a little bit about leadership. So if you would be kind enough to do that, if you haven't, we would greatly appreciate it. Thanks so much for listening, and tune in next time.
Don't forget to check out Southeastern Seminary's numerous education and training opportunities to help you grow in ministry. Visit sebts.edu/5LQ to learn more. That's sebts.edu/5LQ.